This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents Odysseus Ascendant by Evan Curry, performed by David DeVries. Chapter 1. Forge Facility, Rankeel. Her footsteps echoed off the floor and walls of the arching corridor as she strode through the immense structure that rested inside the corona of the Primenae system's primary star. Normally, the sheer concept of this cosmic engineering marvel would occupy most of her mind, but Admiral Grayson had no time for that now. Her courier ship had just arrived in system, bypassing the normal meet-and-greet on Rankeel as it dived directly into the star that hid the forge and docked with one of the hundreds of orbital stations that made up the shield system, preserving the world within from the burning fires of the star. She had very little idea as to what exactly had happened to the Commodore's task force in this last mission, but whatever it was had to be serious. Weston was many things, but an alarmist wasn't one of them. And while he was certainly more than able to be insubordinate for the right reasons, he rarely ever was rude unless wasting time with frivolities was about to get someone killed. Thus his message, via encrypted Primenae messenger crystal and delivered by hand by the Odysseus's first officer, which all but ordered her to take time to visit the forge facility where the Odysseus was undergoing repairs and refit, was unusual for the man. Whatever it was, Weston's reveal had best be good. Or very, very bad. All things considered, she supposed she was betting on the latter. That was just how her luck went. She stepped around a corner and into one of the open sections of the station. The observation windows showed a vista of the roiling stellar plasma that lay beyond the shield, as well as the serene world floating below. She only had eyes for the form of the Odysseus, berthed opposite her position. The big ship had taken a beating, and the Admiral felt a pang in her chest at the carbon scoring that seemed to eclipse the white ceramic of the hull. Most of the holes had apparently been patched, but according to reports, the ship's certification for deep space travel was currently in limbo, at the request of Commodore Weston. If she didn't trust the man, she would be on a warpath already. "We can't have our damn flagship being held up in repairs one bit longer than needed. The Odysseus needs to be making regular returns to Earth's orbit." Politics being what they were, the military situation on Earth was touchier than she'd ever seen, and she had served through three major wars that included the big one, as if that appellation hadn't been used before. Right now, anything that upset the apple cart on Earth was a genuine threat to planetary security. So trust or not, Weston better have a damn good reason for requesting a hold on the certification. From what she could see, carbon scoring aside, the battle cruiser appeared to be in decent enough shape. A few combat scars would be an asset in the current climate back on Earth, giving the people a little evidence of the troubles that were still going on beyond the influence of the sun. Barring new information, Grayson wanted that ship back in space and doing its job yesterday.
"Admiral Grayson?"
She turned to see a young Primenae Ethan, the local equivalent of a lieutenant by comparative ranks, approaching her.
"Yes, Ethan. I was sent to show you the way to the meeting concerning the Odysseus," the young woman said. "If you'll follow me."
Grayson gestured and then fell in behind the Ethan as they started through the corridors. It didn't take her long to recognize that they weren't heading for the shuttle docks.
"Excuse me, why aren't we holding this meeting on the Odysseus?" Grayson asked. "I'm afraid I wasn't cleared for any information regarding the Odysseus repairs," the Ethan admitted. "The entire section has been under rather extreme security since the arrival of the task group, Admiral Tanner's orders, on request of Commodore Weston."
Grayson fell silent then and followed as the Ethan led her through the maze of corridors. Eric Stanton Weston stood in the conference room with hands clasped behind his back, eyes on the ship that floated approximately 100 meters away. He'd requested the farthest slip available, wanting to keep his ship and the being that had apparently taken possession of it as far away as possible from any other similar entities.
He estimated that would ultimately prove to be a losing proposition, as long as they kept the ship intact, but he had to at least try. Whether they would finish the core repairs to the Odysseus was the most important part of the upcoming meeting with the Admiral, a subject he had decidedly mixed feelings on. The entity, Odysseus, was unlike the others he had encountered. Central was very much like the Primae themselves, far too calm and self-assured for his liking, but with the very real knowledge and experience to back up those assurances. Gaia had been, well, the force of nature she was named after. Or perhaps she pretended to be a force of nature. He really didn't know, nor did he especially care at this point. Neither of the entities he had dealt with before was as young as Odysseus, nor as innocent in appearance or action. Eric didn't have a clue how to act with a child on his ship, let alone a child being his ship in a very real way. "This is going to be a long discussion." A tone from the door signaled that someone was approaching, and he turned just as it opened to admit the Admiral. Eric straightened to attention and saluted automatically as she walked in, eyes on him briefly, before she looked past him to the Odysseus floating in the distance.
"As you were," Grayson ordered simply. "And let's get this over with, shall we? I doubt I've been called all the way out here on short notice to hear anything good, so break the bad news already."
Eric realized his thoughts were evident on his face, judging by the way the Admiral's expression changed before he even began to talk. She sighed deeply, holding up a hand to cut him off even as he took a breath to begin.
"Damn it, Commodore! This is going to be another Weston special to clean up, isn't it?"
"Ma'am?" He tipped his head slightly. "I'm afraid this goes back to my second mission to Rankiel. There was an aspect of that mission that's been downplayed in the reporting. I left out some details about the Primae system designated as Central."
"You..."
Grayson paused, head cocking slightly as she seemed uncertain she'd heard him correctly.
"You left out some details? Commodore, you had best explain yourself right now. That statement could be interpreted as a dereliction."
Eric sighed. "I know. Didn't feel I had a lot of choice at the time, and, like most secrets, it snowballed on me faster than I would ever have thought possible. During the invasion, I encountered Earth's version of Central."
"Stop."
Grayson's voice snapped sharply as she held up a hand, glaring at him past the outspread fingers. She took a breath, her arm dropping slowly.
"Something tells me I need more details than that. What the hell are you talking about?"
"Central isn't a computer system, Admiral," Eric said. "Not in the traditional sense, at least. Not any more than you or I are computer systems. I'm not even sure what the hell Central is, and I doubt the Primae have the slightest clue either. It's an intelligence, certainly. Maybe more than that. People would have called it a god once upon a time. But I wouldn't care to make any real statements to that effect myself. Earth's version is currently calling herself Gaia, so you make what you want of that." Grayson pulled out a seat on the frictionless runners and slumped into it, a hand coming up to cover her face.
"Commodore, if you need some time off, there are easier ways to ask."
He smiled slightly. "I wish it was that simple. But that's the reason why I didn't report this fully after the mission. No evidence. And I didn't really feel like spending quality time with the psych coats." The Admiral grimaced.
"Damn."
"Ma'am?"
"Well, you wouldn't have said that unless you currently do have evidence, I suppose. Which means that you're probably telling the truth. Which means now I have to figure out how to explain this lunacy to the Alliance leadership."
She paused.
"Okay. Hit me. What the hell do you have?"
"I have another one of those intelligences," Eric answered. "One that's a lot more talkative than the first two, for better and worse. There's no keeping the secret now. Too many people have seen it."
"It?"
Eric glanced over his shoulder, out to where the ship was resting.
"Him, maybe?"
Eric said thoughtfully, with an uncertainty to his tone. "It's calling itself Odysseus." Grayson's eyes snapped to the ship floating against the backdrop of the roiling plasma, then widened as she began to grasp what he was saying.
Your ship? But how?
Wish I knew, Eric admitted. Whatever it is, however it happened, I couldn't even begin to speculate. What I know is that my crew is now half convinced that the ship is haunted, and they're not exactly wrong.
Setting aside the evidence, which I will be looking at, what can these things do? Grayson asked.
Can't really answer that either, Eric said. I know it's more than I've seen, and what I've seen is bad enough.
Grayson stared evenly at him, not saying a word.
She didn't have to. He knew full well what she was asking. They're mind readers, or close enough to make little difference. Any mind in their range, they scan automatically, he said. There's no intent behind it, just autonomic reflex, if central is to be believed. I'm pretty certain they can warp space-time somehow. I'd be dead if Gaia hadn't intervened when the Odyssey came down over New York. How they do it, even what they do, I don't really know. Central and Gaia are the quiet sort. They apparently did their sowing of wild seeds long enough ago that now they're relatively content to play a more subtle role in their respective worlds. He glanced over his shoulder to where the Odysseus was floating. Odysseus, however, isn't. He's... Lord, I don't know what he is, but he's emulating a child, maybe 12 years old. He's excitable, craves adventure, wants to fight, or at least he did. Not sure he liked his first taste of a real battle.
A child?
Grayson's tone was disbelieving. Not that Eric blamed her. What he was describing on every conceivable level was utterly ridiculous. His ship was, in fact, a preteen. If it weren't so damn serious, he'd be laughing so hard his guts would hurt. That, or cry.
Well, I suppose you'd best show me to this evidence of yours, Grayson said after a moment, pushing back and rising from the seat. Lord, if you're telling the truth, the security breach alone is...
Why do you think I've never brought my ship inside the magnetic field of Rankiel since that second mission? Eric asked as he walked around the small conference table and gestured to the door.
That's all well and good, Commodore, Grayson snapped. But we still send people down. Extremely knowledgeable people, or those of high rank, myself included.
Never figured out how to tell the Admiral she couldn't visit the home world of our allies, Eric said. If it's any consolation, they've sent people just as highly placed to us. I suppose that we're even in that regard.
Grayson snorted.
Get me Gaia's contact number, and maybe I'll buy that. In the meantime, let's see to Odysseus.
Eric nodded. Her reply was really about the best he could expect. Unfortunately, he wasn't done with his report yet.
There's more, I'm afraid.
Oh, God, Grayson said, groaning and pausing mid-step. Some other alien impossibility you want to drop on me, I suppose?
No, this is purely a military issue, but it's not a small one.
I can deal with military issues, Grayson said as they started to walk. What is it?
The Imperials managed to get a partial data dump of a Primine cruiser, he said. We have a list of their search terms, but no confirmation on exactly what they were able to escape with.
I'm assuming that there's something within those terms that concerns you, Grayson asked as they started down the hall.
One, in particular.
Hit me,
the Admiral said, visibly steeling herself as they walked.
They looked for the data the Primine had on any allies, as well as the locations of those allies' home worlds.
Grayson froze in place, face ashen.
Do we have any idea what they escaped with?
Not fully. But on the plus side, the Primine didn't store Earth's location in their ship's database, so we know they didn't get that, Eric answered. I believe that was at your request.
She breathed a little easier.
Yes, it was.
Unfortunately, the Imperials likely got one thing of import, Eric said. Apparently, the Primine mentioned in the database that we only have one world, one system.
Grayson closed her eyes.
Fuck.
Chapter 2 Imperial Space, World Crikey.
One system.
Nabok Misram winced, but nodded simply.
Yes, my lord.
One system. One world. How is this possible?
Lord Yesan Mish rose to his feet, arms thrown up as he stomped forward.
According to your data, they're barely infants at that.
The data seems to be consistent, Misram said, though it is possible that we're dealing with some form of subterfuge, of course. However, based on what we've been able to gather from other sources and our own records in battle, she hesitated before repeating herself,
it seems to be consistent.
This is absurd, Yesan grumbled. How certain are we that the initial contacts were with a single ship rather than a string of individual ships?
Not very,
Misram admitted with an annoyed frown. Our best scans of the area were always based on the gravitic power curve of the combatants, and the unknown contact had effectively zero power curve we could detect. That makes identification extremely difficult, especially since we didn't dare put any vessels close enough to get solid visual confirmation.
I see. I do not like acting without sufficient information. The initial invasion with the tamed Drossen was mishandled.
In my opinion, my lord, it was a bad idea entirely,
Misram said.
What was the plan?
The Drossen destroy worlds. We could not have moved in afterward, as there would have been no controlling those planets after the Drossen were through.
The point was never control, my lady Misram,
Yesan said softly.
The plan was annihilation.
Misram blinked, uncertain she entirely believed what she'd heard.
Pardon?
You didn't mishear.
That's madness, she insisted. There's no benefit to the Empire in that.
Yes and no. There is, in fact, a benefit to the Empire, but that wasn't the point of the invasion.
What was the point, then?
Revenge. Some of our people hold long grudges,
Yesan answered.
Longer than you or I might want to believe.
Misram gaped at him for an instant before she managed to get her expression under control.
Revenge? For something that happened before even our recorded history? Who was so abysmally insane?
That is the question, isn't it?
Yesan said, a rhetorical hint to his tone.
Unfortunately, even I don't know the answer. Whoever initiated that operation did so while covering their tracks quite effectively. Everyone I've been in contact with reacted much the same as you. Going after the Oathers makes sense, but unleashing the Drossen the way we have does not. Certainly not on their home world. That is a rich world worth much to the Empire, and if any of the legendary technology the Oathers were supposed to have absconded with still exists, that planet would be the most likely location. Every analyst I've spoken with seemed to have been under the impression that we would offer a chance to surrender after the Drossen annihilated the Oather fleet. Unfortunately, the people who were holding the reins of those monsters had rather different orders.
Treason?
Misram asked.
One word, a simple question, but not so simple in truth.
No, Yesan answered, his undiluted response surprising her.
The orders were authentic. I even know who issued them. But the Imperial command structure is a web of confusion the likes of which a fleet Navok like yourself could only have nightmares about.
So you don't know who originated the intent behind the orders?
Not at all, Yesan said, then gestured casually, with some disinterest in his expression. Not that it matters. It's all academic, really. No one cares if the Oathers die. Most might prefer it. Wasteful, yes, I agree. But the only difference between the majority of the Empire and whoever did authorize that invasion is that most Imperial citizens do not especially care enough to make the Oathers end happen. Someone did. So be it.
So be it. Have you seen the size of the mess they've left us to clean up?
Misram said.
Yes, well, it would have been better if they had been competent in their actions, I will agree.
Yesan sighed.
Still, that's not relevant for the moment. What is relevant is whether we can trust the data you acquired. According to the reports your team had to transmit through jamming, they weren't allowed to escape? None of them got off that ship, my lord, she responded.
Good, Yesung said. Then the data is more likely to be accurate. I believe we can risk acting on it, but I will have to ensure success this time.
My squadron stands ready, my lord.
No, Navarch, not this time, Yesung answered. This time I believe I'll bring up the sector fleet.
Misrem stared for a moment, rather stunned. That seems excessive, my lord.
I know. But I've had enough of the issues caused by this mess, Yesung answered. It's time to put an end to them for good.
The sector fleet? Misrem was stunned, honestly, that the lord of the Imperial Sector would authorize something that extreme. Her squadron, with some augmentation, should be enough to handle the size of the enemy forces they had been able to determine existed from the data. The total number was stunningly small. If she had known just how minuscule the might of the enemy was, she would have pressed the fight to its conclusion at their last encounter. Certainly, she would have lost much of her squadron, but the crippling of the opposing forces would have been worth a tally. At most, she had expected a second squadron to be assigned, not the entire sector fleet. The Empire only had 7 sector fleets, including home fleet. Each was more than sufficient to fight a major war. Often sector fleets had been known to handle 2 or 3 such wars while putting down a couple of minor uprisings. Based on the data she'd retrieved from the Othar vessel, sending an entire sector fleet wasn't just overkill, it was pure waste. Her squadron consisted of between 24 and 40 vessels, depending on how much the Empire saw fit to augment her forces for given missions. While she commanded one of the more powerful squadrons in the sector, it was only one of 18 assigned to the sector fleet's command structure. The fleet itself also had another 20 dreadnought-class vessels, each massing nearly as much individual firepower as her entire squadron. She couldn't believe that Lord Yesung was going to uncover his sector for a pacification program like this. No, he wouldn't recklessly uncover his sector. It's tactically and strategically foolish. Yesung is many things, but a fool isn't among them. What's his plan, then? The Othars were annoyingly inoffensive and hardly a threat to the Empire, and Misrem was unable to imagine what about them would cause the Sector Lord to commit his entire fleet to a mission. Perhaps the others were the cause, then. They were far from the inoffensive non-threat of the Othars. Still, that didn't track either. The enemy just didn't have the numbers to draw out a force like the Sector Fleet. She supposed it didn't matter. Her orders were now set, but she would be bothered until she worked out his true intent. Yesung watched as the door closed behind the withdrawing figure of the Navarch, unsurprised to see her intense confusion and thoughtfulness. Misrem had a reputation for tactical excellence and skill in strategic maneuvers. If she had encountered such fierce resistance in both of her forays into the enemy sector, then the matter was serious. Both times, from the species, they had only identified as the anomalies. Now they had a name, though he supposed one name was as good as another. Humans, what they called their species. Unsurprisingly, it was likely what they called both Imperials and Othars as well. They were obviously of the same initial programmed genetic drift that seemed to be a galaxy-wide phenomenon. Truly bizarre intelligences did exist, he knew. The Empire had annihilated more than a few, species so different that communication was effectively impossible. Ending them was really the only acceptable outcome. The Imperial standard, however, seemed the most common form in the galaxy, and the most successful, with good reason. It was the height of foolishness to allow a species one couldn't converse with to have even the possibility of space travel. There were far too many ways to commit genocide once you could leave your own world and travel the stars. No sane species would leave another alive as long as the slightest chance existed of such an outcome. It would be immoral beyond the most perverse depths of depravity to risk your own in such a way. The Empire learned that difficult lesson a long time ago. Kill those who might become the enemy, lest they do the same to you first. These self-named humans, however, were an interesting dilemma. They could communicate, and they were clearly willing to make treaties and alliances. Unfortunately for them, they elected to side with the Others, but the humans might still have some things worth acquiring before the war was ended. Obviously, they had new takes on technical advances, the sorts of things that would be of inestimable value within the Empire. Clearly, however, if they could fight off the Drossen, then taking their world would be difficult. One world, however, could not possibly defend itself against the might of a sector fleet. Even if some of the intelligence returned by the Navarx squadron was fabricated, he intended to be certain that he brought enough force to the confrontation to end this farce once and for all. Once they had everything they wanted from the Other and human homeworlds, then he would have the firepower he needed to ensure that this dragon was put back to sleep. Once and for all time to follow. Captain Ames glowered as he strode down the corridors of his vessel, frustrated beyond belief by the nonsense he'd been dealing with since orders had come down for mandatory refits of all ships in the region. Considering the massive weapons and armor refit they were undergoing that appear to be based on the systems they believed the anomalous species used, his forces were seemingly shifting from an exploratory stance to one of full-scale war. He shouldn't have been surprised. He'd had access to the intelligence captured from the boarding of the Other vessel, and the information was rather explosive. Even forgetting about the actual intelligence they'd gathered, items that could be proven, Ames was well aware the idea that a single world had caused them as much trouble as it had wouldn't sit well with the upper echelon of the fleet, nor would the nobles receive such news particularly well. He knew that. He accepted that. War was his business, after all, and he'd never been found wanting for places to conduct his affairs. The fact that they were tearing his damn ship apart without so much as a little advance warning, that was pissing him off. Ames schooled his expression into a more neutral mask as he approached the bridge. He knew of two political informants on his command staff, and likely was missing at least one other, unless fleet intelligence had gotten sloppy. So he saw no reason to give any of them munition to use against him. Actual political officers wouldn't be so bad. They were already in their assigned spot and not technically in the chain of command. When dealing with one of those in Ames' experience, you just worked out where they stood and learned to convey what they expected of an officer. All but the most unhinged and, frankly, stupid ones generally understood that even captains were occasionally prone to emotions. The stupid ones usually didn't last too long before suffering an accident. He'd arranged two of those in a row once before. Fleet Intelligence sent him someone with a polite request to be more subtle about his machinations in the future. Since the person issuing the request was his new political officer at the time, Ames thought that the message had been amusingly clever. The new man decided not to be too much of a pain about things, however, so Ames decided that Fleet Intelligence wasn't so bad. At least they had a sense of humor, dark though it might be. Unfortunately, when they suborned his staff, that was a whole other problem. His staff were in his chain of command, which meant that if he were suddenly removed from command for, treason, as an example, everyone below him was possibly positioned for a bump in rank. Ames hated having to tread lightly around spies in his chain of command, but some weren't smart enough to work out that a bump in rank gained via subterfuge was as likely to end with them in an interrogation cell as behind a better desk. Smart spies he could handle, but the stupid ones were dangerous. His crew, while down to minimum staffing, were working efficiently as Ames stepped onto the command deck and looked around briefly. He expected no less, but was still gratified to see them in action. Most of the internal systems were down for refit, which blacked out 3/4 of the displays and stations, and being in a refit slip meant that they were getting basically nothing on any of their external equipment, which blacked out almost all of what remained. Masking a frustrated sigh, Ames settled into his station and called up his personal files. With refits continuing apace, he had to assume that the vessel would be deploying for action just as soon as the work was done. If the system lord intended them to have time to properly work up to a reasonable fitness level,
he would have broken up the refits into more manageable chunks. So Ames put aside as many of his frustrations as he could and set to work building simulations that would allow his teams to practice with the new equipment. It was a bad way to conduct a war, frankly, but he had little choice, so he would work with what he was given.
Chapter 3 AEV, Allied Earth Vessel Odysseus, Forge Facility, Rankiel.
The deck was quiet as the Commodore and Admiral walked across the expanse, the lights dim, as most of the lines to the reactor were cut, and the reactor itself was being held on the edge of stability for safety reasons. Grayson felt a chill that she knew had to be psychosomatic. The idea of intentionally keeping a ship's reactor on the edge of stability bothered her on a deeply instinctual level, despite her academic understanding of the process. Unlike most reactors, when working with a singularity system, the last thing you wanted was an out-of-control stable reactor. Being stable was incredibly bad, because it meant that the singularity had sufficient mass to be self-sustaining and couldn't be shut down. While underway, keeping the system somewhat stable was necessary, if only barely, but the last thing anyone wanted in orbit of a habited world, or worse in this case, within a stellar primary, was a stable singularity. My ship ate the sun would be a lousy epitaph for a civilization.
If you're right, Commodore, this is going to turn bad on us much quicker than we feared, Grayson said as she considered what Eric had unveiled concerning the intelligence coup the Empire had likely pulled off.
Eric nodded, his expression grim. I can't really find a way to put a shine on this one, Admiral. If they did get the intel we think they got, then they know that we've just been pulling the interstellar equivalent of a stone-cold bluff. My read on the Empire says that if they work that out, if they even think that's what's been happening, then they'll call us on it. Grayson grunted in disgust, but had to agree. The Imperials were a confrontational sort. Even the few prisoners Terran and Prim forces had managed to gather showed that, right down to the lowest ranked among the enemy. They challenged on everything, and not just once either. If they thought circumstances might have changed, they challenged again, even though they had to know that the odds weren't in their favor. She supposed it might have something to do with them being held by the Primine, who were notoriously soft by most standards. But Grayson didn't really think that was the case. Despite the Primine being a lot nicer about things than she knew Terran guards were, Grayson couldn't fault the discipline the Primine brought to the job. They didn't just take crap and smile, but followed their protocol every time, no matter the provocation or how many times they'd repeated certain tasks. No, the Imperial prisoners were just programmed to challenge near constantly, she suspected, and if that was a social aspect of their culture, then there was no question in her mind that Weston was right. If they suspected a bluff, even for a moment, they would call it without any hesitance. Social programming was rather difficult to evaluate, at least without a decent understanding of the society in question. Unfortunately, while Grayson's people had been progressing quite well in understanding just how the Primine and Imperial genomes varied from solar humans, their cultures were still largely mysterious. Even the Primine, who were open about theirs, had too much social history to quickly parse and break down. For the moment, all they knew was that the Imperials were incredibly confrontational and didn't like to back down. Not until they'd been made to back down, and even then, their submission might not hold for long.
"We'll have to increase patrols," she said finally.
"It'll stress our people," Eric offered. "We don't have enough ships to properly schedule them."
"Can't be helped. I'll write up the orders as soon as I get back."
Eric nodded, agreeing with her despite the issues involved with upping their patrol schedules. As it was, he didn't expect his people to see a home port for quite some time. That was the way of things when you were in the military, more so when there was a real conflict looming. Months away from home at a given time were bread and butter for a military man, but it could be hard all the same. He just accepted the orders, however, knowing that his people would suck it up and deal with new realities. They were professionals.
"I'll have to put the Big E back on the rotations," Grayson said hesitantly.
"Do it," Eric told her, no hesitation. "That ship isn't up to modern standards, Eric," she said sternly. "If I'd had my way, we'd have scrapped that hull, not given her a legacy name." Eric sighed, knowing that she had a point. The Enterprise had sacrificed herself during the last battle that pushed the Drossen off Earth and out of the solar system, and she'd done so spectacularly. There would always be a Big E in the fleet after that, but he agreed that they should have waited and given the name to one of the new heroics coming along, rather than slapping it on a near-finished hull from pre-invasion. After what Captain Caro had done and what the Enterprise sacrificed, it deserved better than to be obsolete before it was even commissioned. Still, he believed that she was underestimating just what that ship could do. "The Odyssey class isn't far off the Rogues, Admiral," Eric responded finally. "And the Big E packs how many squadrons of the Vorpals now? 4?
5, actually. But the enemy has been soaking up ship-to-ship missiles with little effort," Grayson said as they continued to walk. "I don't want to set our pilots up against targets like that. It's suicide."
"Admiral, pilots want to fly. Fighter pilots want to fight. If you're in doubt, just ask them. Not only will they all stand up and volunteer, they'll start ripping into every bit of intelligence we have on enemy formations, looking for holes. If nothing else, they'll be able to harass and tear into the enemy parasite ships and destroyers, freeing up shipboard missiles for the big boys."
Grayson grimaced, but didn't feel like she had any other choice. They needed every ship they could get out on patrol, and putting the Enterprise on the line would let her keep one more heroic in Seoul as part of the home defense shield. Ideally, she would prefer to put most of that shield out on patrol as well, but that was a politically impossible option.
"I may just do that, Commodore."
Grayson's voice trailed off slowly as she spotted a figure sitting in the center of the deck up ahead of them. It was clearly a child, the proportions all wrong for anything else. Slightly gangly arms and legs, a body that seemed to be lost in the armor the figure wore, and a head just a little too large proportionally for an adult.
"Though the helmet might be affecting my thoughts there,"
Grayson admitted to herself as she examined the figure closely. The armor was ancient, either Greek or Roman, and possibly some melding of the two. She was familiar enough with that historic period to recognize elements of both, but Grayson was also aware that both cultures had developed a vast array of variations between them. The attire was clearly pre-Roman Empire, however, of that she was certain. The shield that rested on the floor a short distance away was Greek, beyond any shadow of a doubt. A classic hoplite, commonly recognized as the Spartan shield. It looked far too heavy for the boy to carry normally, let alone into battle.
"Admiral," Eric said, distracting her slightly, causing her eyes to flicker over to the man standing beside her in a space-black casual uniform. "Allow me to present Odysseus." "Odysseus, this is the Admiral."
Grayson's gaze flicked back, and she started as she saw that in her split second of distraction, the armored figure had somehow managed to silently get to his feet, turn to face them, and throw up a perfect modern salute, which he then followed up with a thump of his fist over his heart.
"Admiral!"
the slightly too high voice said, with the intensity she would have expected from a boot camp graduate.
"Odysseus,"
she said softly, taking in the boy's face and committing the features to memory. The eyes, she realized, reminded her of the Commodore's more than anything. In a startled moment of recognition, Grayson suddenly saw several features she knew in that face. Features of the Commodore, some of his command, especially Commander Michaels, unless she was mistaken, and herself. And another item caught her attention.
"Why is he wearing glitter pink eyeshadow?"
"I like pink,"
the boy replied, as though she had spoken aloud, his voice solemn.
"Ah, I see,"
Grayson said, swallowing as she glanced at Eric, who shrugged slightly.
"Pleasure to meet you," she said uncertainly. "Odysseus, is it?"
"Yes, ma'am,"
the boy said firmly. "Odysseus, the warrior king. You named me."
"I suppose I did, yes,"
she nodded, cocking her head slightly.
"Do you like your name?"
That seemed to set the boy back for a moment, his face closing up as he slowly appeared to consider the question deeply. Finally, he looked back at her.
I don't know. Am I supposed to?
Some people do, some don't, Eric said. There's nothing deep in the question, Odysseus, just what it sounded like.
Oh,
the boy said, thinking again for a moment. Grayson found herself unsure about how to take in the whole situation, which was ethereal and entirely unreal. And yet she couldn't seem to disassociate herself from this being. The boy in front of her was somehow a starship? Worse, to her mind at least, he was one of the most powerful starships in the recorded history of two cultures, one of which had been a spacefaring civilization since before their acknowledged history. And this vessel was one of the most important symbols of human strength in the galaxy. Yet, the ship seemed honestly confused as to whether it liked its name.
There is so much wrong with this. I don't know where to begin.
Grayson had forcibly kept herself under control, unwilling to start publicly ranting or raving about impossibilities. She would save that for the privacy of her quarters, preferably with a bottle of gin to fuel the moment. For now, she refused to be made or make herself a spectacle.
I think,
the boy said, looking up at her through the surprisingly intense eyes that were surrounded by luminous glitter.
I think I like the name. That's good, right?
Grayson noted that the boy looked to Eric, expression uncertain but more open than he had been.
Yes, I would say that's good, Eric said with a very slight smile. Names can have a big impact on our lives, or they can have no impact at all.
Strange.
The boy, Odysseus, frowned.
If they're important sometimes, why aren't they always important?
People are strange, Odysseus, Grayson answered, before she could stop to analyze her own thoughts any more.
Some people let their name define them. Others choose to define their name through their actions. We all approach life in surprisingly different ways, so you can't expect one person to react in the same way as another.
Odysseus seemed genuinely bothered by that.
That seems wrong. Math describes the universe, doesn't it?
It seems to, Eric said.
Math was far from Grayson's personal specialty, though she was competent in the concepts she dealt with as part of her position, of course. She also knew that Eric could do interception calculations in his head faster than any computer, though admittedly not as precisely. As a fighter pilot, he had always held this key advantage over the vast majority of his opponents. Often he would be leaning in the right direction by the time the computer spat out the precise numbers needed to resolve a situation, giving him as much as 2 or 3 extra seconds over his opponents. Eternity in a dogfight. The difference between life and death. The sort of math Odysseus was referring to was well over both their heads, however, and Grayson was aware of that.
Math is reliable, but people aren't?
Odysseus frowned.
But people are ruled by math. Deep down, I don't understand.
Grayson started to respond, but Eric's hand brushed her shoulder. As she glanced over, he nodded behind her and she acceded to the suggestion, drawing away from Odysseus at the Commodore's direction.
Every conversation with him eventually ends up like this, Eric said softly as they walked. He's learning, and fast, but he experiences the universe from more perspectives than we do. Every set of eyes on the ship are his eyes. The ship's computers seem to be his brain, as much as... I don't know.
We know when he's accessing the computers, since our security systems can track when he calls up files. But he clearly has a brain of his own, too.
He can see through the ship's scanners, then?
Grayson asked, her own tone matching the Commodore's.
Yes, he thinks in deep math. Only a handful on board can keep up with him in regards to the equations, but he's still developing what we would call intuition. Every now and then I can get ahead of him just because I get a feeling of where the math is going faster than he can. I think it drives him a little nuts when that happens.
Grayson glanced a little sourly at Eric's clear amusement.
Please don't antagonize the warship that can glass the surface of planets.
Well, good news there, Eric said. He can't override our hardline safety systems.
I wouldn't want to rely on the software systems, but our heavy stuff all requires bridging a real circuit to release them for combat.
Thank God for small favors, Grayson muttered.
She glanced over her shoulder, remembering what the Commodore had told her earlier.
Wait, he can read minds?
Yes, ma'am.
So why...
Are we being quiet? Eric asked, and she nodded confirmation. Odysseus recognizes our desire for privacy, even if he doesn't understand it. If we're quiet, he mostly won't answer questions we don't ask, or comment on our conversation later.
But he still...
She let the question trail off as Eric gave her a knowing look.
Every thought is automatically scanned as I understand it, Eric said. Though I shouldn't say scanned, exactly.
He doesn't process them as external thoughts. Every thought you have, he has at the same time, as though it's his own. Keeping in mind that we're really still trying to figure all this out ourselves, Eric frowned seriously. I've spoken with Raim and a few others about trying to better comprehend what's going on. As best we can determine, people within Odysseus's range of influence are like neurons firing in his brain. We're independent, but we're also part of him.
That is both fascinating and incredibly disturbing, Grayson admitted.
I can't imagine it's any better for him. From his point of view, he has to be thinking what we might call suicidal thoughts quite often.
What?
Grayson asked sharply. How many times have you thought about how to eliminate him since you came on board? Eric asked pointedly. Grayson paled, considering that. If her thoughts were interpreted by Odysseus as his own, then... She groaned, pinching her nose.
My brain hurts, she grumbled.
Understandable, Eric chuckled. Most people who deal with Odysseus seem to have that reaction.
Most? Grayson asked dryly.
Steph thinks he's a great kid. Eric rolled his eyes. There's always been something wrong about Steph. I love him, don't get me wrong, but he's nuts.
I seem to recall more than a few people saying the same of you in your jacket, Commodore. The part about you being nuts, at least.
Eric just gestured casually, not worried about any notations like that in his record. I was a U.S. Marine. If we weren't nuts... We weren't doing the job right. Grayson snorted, and then her mind was brought back in line with the current situation.
Damn it, we don't need this right now, she hissed. I can't clear you or this ship for missions, Eric.
I know.
But we can't lose an entire heroic either. What the hell are we going to do?
She wiped her hand down her face in exasperation.
If I don't clear this ship for duty, I'm going to have to explain this before the Naval Council. And there is no way I'm doing that without a hell of a lot more information and corroborating evidence backing me up. Commodore, you bring me the worst migraines.
Sorry about that, Admiral, Eric said, not sounding apologetic in the least. We have some time before you have to make that decision, thankfully. Full repairs will take some more time. I'd say we'd be here another couple weeks if the ship weren't on a priority run.
How long, actually, then? Grayson asked dryly.
Few more days, but we can be creative with the paperwork.
Do it, she ordered. I'll find some way to explain why you're not out in the black. But damn it, Commodore, get this figured out. I don't care how you do it, but we need the Odysseus in the line.
Understood, ma'am.
She's gone.
Eric sighed, but didn't jump as the voice came from where no one had been standing just an instant earlier. I know. And what have I told you about sneaking up on people like that?
Sorry.
Eric wished he had a better idea of how to deal with kids. But then again, he had no idea if Odysseus was actually as young as he seemed. He couldn't help but compare the entity to a child, but he was also aware of how potentially dangerous that line of thinking was.
She didn't like me,
Odysseus told him, the boy's voice a little flat. She doesn't know you, Eric corrected. She didn't like that we can't deploy until we have a better understanding of what happened.
I will be fully prepared for battle within 2 days, 5 hours, and 43 minutes, according to the current schedule,
Odysseus responded with just a hint of indignation.
We may deploy at any time. The remaining repairs can be handled while underway.
"There's more here than repairs, and you know it," Eric told the boy sternly, wondering when he'd become babysitter or, so much worse, a daddy. Odysseus was silent for a long moment before reluctantly conceding the point.
"My presence compromises crew efficiency," Eric nodded.
"Yes, it does."
"Perhaps the thoughts are right. I should go away,"
Odysseus said, his tone suddenly soft. Eric stamped down on his knee-jerk reactions, though he knew that Odysseus would have thought every one of them at the same moment as well. He knew all the arguments, both logical and emotional, that had raged among those exposed to Odysseus on board the ship. He couldn't stop the boy, entity, whatever. Eric couldn't stop him from interacting with the crew, and Odysseus seemed much more desirous of interaction than either Central or Gaia. His existence, while still confusing to most of the crew, was well on its way to becoming a well-known and almost accepted part of shipboard operations. There was still a lot of misinformation surrounding the entity, of course, which ranged from a ghost haunting the ship to an alien invader. Sometimes, to be honest, Eric didn't know which of the two he leaned toward. "I think," he said slowly, running the thoughts through his mind carefully, more for his own benefit than that of his companion, "that you could be a great benefit to the efficiency of the crew in time." That much was the truth, of course. He'd seen how the boy had managed to play with the ship's functions, making his namesake a veritable powerhouse the likes of which should never have been physically possible. Still, the boy's aim sort of sucked, of course, and Lord knew the kid didn't have a clue how to operate the ship in combat. Those were all skills that could be taught, however, and Eric had found himself excited to do just that.
"Perhaps," Odysseus replied after a moment, I was excited for battle, you know."
"I do. What do you feel now?"
"I don't know. The fight hurt," Odysseus admitted. "It hurt bad. Did I do that to others?"
Moments like that were when Eric rather wished that his mind wasn't an open book to the entity at his side. Lying would be so much easier. "Yes, maybe not in exactly the same ways, but yes, you did," Eric said. "Or the ship did, at my orders."
"Why?"
That's a question no human has ever had a good answer for. Not on the level you want, at least. I can tell you why we did those specific actions, but you already have the answers. You want to know why we do violence at all, and I don't have an answer for that."
"I thought I was the mind reader."
"You are. But you're also asking questions every young soldier asks himself, sooner or later."
"What answer do they come to?"
"Everyone comes to their own," Eric said. "But most tend to reach some variation of a single response."
"Which is?"
"We fight for the man standing beside us," Eric answered instantly. "The men and women who stand and fall at our side. Home, nations, ideologies, they all come in a distant second, sometimes even farther down the list. In the moment, all those things bleed away, and when the bullets fly, we fight for the women and men who are right there with us, in the mud and in the blood." Odysseus was silent for a long time before fading away, apparently either satisfied with the answer or going away to mull it over. Eric hoped the entity would be satisfied. Grayson's mind whirled as she sat quietly in the bolstered seat of the courier vessel as it left the forge facility. She could always count on the Commodore to bring her a migraine, she reflected as they passed through the solar corona and into the open space of the Rankiel system. "Admiral," the ship's captain, Commander Nakala, called back to her. "Automated message from Admiral Tanner. He wishes to invite you to a dinner before we return to Earth space."
"Negative, Commander. Please issue my regrets to the Admiral, but we won't have time to divert to Rankiel."
"The Admiral seems to have anticipated that, ma'am. He's suggesting a meeting on the Primine flagship, a heroic class just cleared from the Forge. They're offering to meet and pace us on our way out of the system." Grayson considered that for a moment, realizing that Tanner had to know at least part of the story now. The Commodore had needed to help him cover up the oddities in the Odysseus' situation.
Very well. Arrange to rendezvous with Heroic. I'll meet with the Admiral for that meal.
Aye, ma'am.
If nothing else, she supposed, the dinner discussion should be fascinating.
Chapter 4 AEV Bellerophon, Renkeel System.
The Commodore shuttle has landed, Captain.
Thank you, Lieutenant, Captain Jason Roberts said, standing up. Commander, you have the bridge.
Aye, Captain, his first officer responded automatically. I have the bridge.
Jason made his way from the command deck, moving up through the ship's other decks via the lifts to the exterior where the shuttle bays were located. He was unhurried, knowing that it took some time to move a shuttle inside and then to pressurize the connections to allow people to disembark. He hoped that the Commodore had some answers. The rumors that had been floating around were getting out of hand, no matter how absurd they were. Jason was well aware that even the least likely of rumors would be able to disrupt shipboard operations if enough people started to believe it might be true. The idea that the Odyssey was haunted, of all the insane and inane things, was of course the most ludicrous thing he'd heard in a damn long time. But crews could be superstitious in absurd ways. He still remembered those fools painting containment circles in the pulse torpedo containment areas. Eric had taught him that you were better to leave the harmless superstitions be, but stamping on the troublesome ones had to be a priority. Why hasn't he stamped out this damn ghost rumor? The lift opened on the flight deck, and he almost immediately saw Commodore Weston's shuttle secured into place and being offloaded on the other side of the sealed observation deck. He settled in to wait for the Commodore to get through the pressure seals. Only a few moments passed before the seal hatch opened and the Commodore stepped off ahead of the rest of the crew and passengers.
"Commodore," Robert said, standing straight as he greeted his CO, "welcome aboard the Bellerophon."
"Glad to be aboard, Captain,"
Eric Weston said firmly before smiling.
"I understand the bell is shipshape again?"
"All repairs complete. We're ready to go, sir."
"Good, good."
Eric glanced around briefly. He nodded to the exit.
"Walk with me, Captain. We need to talk."
Roberts nodded automatically, but the phrasing set alarm bells ringing. What the hell is going on?
The Commodore led him out, but not to the lift, instead turning and heading along the inner ring that linked the shuttle and flight decks. It wasn't quite the most private place on the ship, but it was close.
"This is going to be one hell of a conversation, isn't it, sir?"
Roberts asked stiffly.
"More than you're going to know for a while, Captain," Eric said with a tired smile. "Captain, Jason, you're going to be leading the squadron for a while."
"Sir?"
Roberts looked over at him sharply.
"Did the Admiral?"
He'd known that the Admiral had visited, but it never occurred to him that Weston was in any significant trouble over the confrontation with the Imperials.
"No, Captain, I've not been relieved,"
Eric chuckled, clearly guessing where his colleague's mind had gone.
"Then what's going on, sir?"
"The Odysseus is going to be undergoing an extensive recertification," Eric explained. "I can't tell you why, just that it's related to the reason for the ship suddenly overcharging on us during the fight."
Roberts hesitated, thinking about that.
"Is there any risk that our ships will do the same?" he asked,
thinking about the bell and the bow in particular.
"Can't say for sure. We haven't figured out what caused it on the Odysseus yet," Eric admitted. "Not what initiated it, anyway. Still, seems highly unlikely that you'll see anything of this nature happen on your own ship."
"Pardon me if I'm a little relieved at that, sir."
Eric laughed as they walked. "Completely understandable.
What will our mission be in the meantime?"
"That's going to be the rub, Captain," Eric told him seriously. "Officially, we're just stepping up our patrol schedule, commensurate with an increased ability to project force now that Earth's Forge is about to come online." That, Roberts knew, was a bald-faced lie. Certainly, Earth's new shipyard was officially online, but it would be some time before the first hulls were ready for crews to take over from the yard rats. Additionally, with the Odysseus off the roster, they were actually short a hull and lacking in projection capability.
"We're expecting more incursions then," Robert said, not questioning the decision.
"We're expecting more than an incursion, Captain. We're expecting a full-on invasion force next."
Roberts looked at him intently, eyes glittering with deep curiosity. He had known that the enemy managed to escape with intel, but he was under the impression that no one was really sure what they got.
How certain are we of this? Enough that the Admiral is pulling the Big E from home fleet and sending her out here, Eric said.
Roberts whistled softly.